You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Trying to clear my throat here, folks. You might have heard that, you know. So I've been drinking a little coffee, and sometimes it gets a little rough. And I'm trying to clear my throat here. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, Blog Talk Radio Show, WTTY, on internet radio. We're all over the world, folks. I get calls from all over the world. I get plenty of listeners, plenty of followers. Check that thing out. This show is on its way up, if it's not up already. We've been checking the stats here, and they've been looking pretty positive, pretty positive. And it's a great day in Chicago. It's 6:02 p.m. straight up Chicago time, Central Standard Time. We're in the Midwest, of course, and it's a beautiful state. It's a beautiful time, and it's beautiful weather once again. The weather is great in the city of Chicago, and I hope it's great where you are, but some people aren't having it that well. But in Chicago, it is great. It's wonderful. It's a little cooler than it was in the last few days, but it's still beautiful. Beautiful, wonderful, beautiful. People are out and about doing whatever they have to do, go wherever they're going, coming from wherever they're coming from. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and today... It is expected that my guest, Bridget Rassen, would be on the George Wilder Jr. Show, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. I'm always mispronouncing someone's name, but they're always so generous about it. Okay, well, we're going to be talking about a lot of things today. We're going to be talking about CPS, Chicago Public Schools, Bruce Rauner, all of that stuff. We're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton. Some things about Donald Trump, and I'm not going to dwell on a lot of this stuff because we're going to keep moving on because this show is so short. For an hour and a half or 2 hours, it's to me that's short because I can talk my ass off for a long time. Well, anyway, we are... broadcasting straight out of Chicago, and as you know, Chicago is having a lot of problems, and basically this talk show host, some of the topics that I talk about are covering the city of Chicago because it's such a mess, and we're trying to make the world a better place, one place at a time, one show at a time, starting with the city of Chicago. Then we'll move on to Detroit, Los Angeles, and so on and so forth. But anyway, some of the teachers and the principals, if we can talk about Chicago Public Schools, some of the teachers, the principals are quitting. They're walking out. And in some cases, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. I really don't, because they're walking out because of the budget stalemate. There's no budget, and the schools are being threatened not to open after the summer. So the teachers don't want to find themselves unemployed because of politicians playing games. They don't want to find themselves out in the street because, you know, they don't want to see the children that they're trying to teach ruined. And above all, that they are people just like we are. They have to make a living. They need to get paid. And without a budget, there's no paycheck. Without a budget in the state of Illinois, and this is twice now that Bruce Rauner has refused to fund these schools. He talks about the schools like they are a pile of manure. And we all say, if they're that bad, Bruce Rauner, then why don't you fund them? Bruce Rauner is calling Chicago Public Schools crumbling prisons. These are his words. And I saw the video where he actually said this. I mean, it's all over the news. I mean, people on Facebook and Twitter, they are really hitting back hard at this guy for calling our public schools in Chicago crumbling prisons. He's calling them prisons. And that is so damn wrong. Why are you calling these schools? If they're prisons, then why don't you fund them? You know, but he will not fund them. He will not bring these schools back from the brink of annihilation, because this is what's happening. They are not prisons, and we've all said that. These schools are, Chicago Public Schools are not prisons. We just got a screwed up, loose in the head, non-caring, racist governor. That's what's going on in the state of Illinois. We have a racist governor. He can't help himself. And it's showing all over the place. He goes downstate, the suburban areas of Illinois, and talks about Chicago like Chicago is the manure of the world. He talks about it. He can't stand Chicago. He can't stand Chicago schools. He loves charter schools. And the only reason why he loves charter schools is because there's no unions. There's no union members. There's nothing there. Teachers at charter schools can be fired at will. Principals, directors, whatever they want to call themselves, can be fired at will because they have no protection. That's why Bruce Rauner loves charter schools. But charter schools are also public schools. Okay? But to call, at least in Chicago, they are. But to call schools crumbling prisons in Chicago, the Chicago Public Schools, that's a low blow. And that's what this guy's been doing. He's been low blowing since it sounds a little bit awkward. He's been doing this forever. The Chicago teachers superintendent Forrest Claypool called him if you think about it, Claypool has been over the back, was trying to get funding, trying to get Bruce Rauner to see that it's dire that these schools be funded. I mean, he tried to convince this guy, you know, in every shape and form that Chicago Public Schools are real schools and with real teachers and real students in need. But Bruce Rauner will not see that. He sees an entity that he wants to take over, put his people there, and as if he can solve all the problems, get rid of the unions. Hell, this is the second time in a row that he's refused to have a budget for the city of Chicago and the schools. So the teachers are leaving. They don't want to be caught red-handed without a job if schools do not open after the summer of 2016. We don't know if the schools in this Chicago if they're going to open. Forrest Claypool, the president of the Chicago Public Schools, the superintendent, says definitely if Springfield, Bruce Rauner, doesn't come up with a funding package for Chicago Public Schools, they will not open after the summer break. And I believe for some schools, summer break starts on the 22nd. and ends in August. And some schools, you know, they get out a little bit earlier, maybe a week earlier in June, and they're back in September. But none, but whether they're charter schools or public schools, they're all public schools. So a lot of these schools will not open. If they don't open, that means the teachers will not have a job. So some of the teachers and some of the principals are jumping ship. Rightly so, I agree, because they have to make a living too. I mean, they need a paycheck. You know, some of these teachers are dedicated teachers, and a lot of them are pissed the hell off at Rauner calling their schools crumbling prisons. I mean, when he said it with an awful look on his face, like he just couldn't stand them, you know. He can't stand public schools. Forrest Claypool heard this, and he called Bruce Rauner ignorant. And I agree. I would call him a lot worse things than that. He is ignorant. And one of the things that a lot of the protesters downtown, and they're always protesting Bruce Rauner, but he looks at protest as, you know, wasteful. He looks at it as wasteful. You know, he looks at it as it has nothing to do with getting a budget. It's wasteful. This man will not budge. He will not do anything. And now Illinois is looking forward to getting a budget around after the elections, November elections. That's too damn long. People are going to be dead by then, who rely on these services that they're not getting. And Bruce Rauner just don't give a damn. He's a failed governor, and he knows it. And he's trying to call other people failures, turning it around on them, and they're not. He's the failure. He is the main failure. The Illinois Constitution says a governor does his job when he signs a budget into law. He hasn't signed up. This is twice that he has not signed a budget into law. This is crazy. A lot of the programs, charities, organizations, and agencies are upended, including Chicago Public Schools, because this guy just steadfast in his stupidness, in his dumbness, in his ignorance, and wanting to see the state crumble. In some cases, people are saying Bruce Rauner planned it. This is what he wants. He wanted this people to argue. He wants people to fight. He wants people to up and quit. That way, him and his rich buddies can take over. But that's not going to happen because you have a Democratic legislature, and they are not going to let that happen. Bruce Rauner is not going to be able to get anything whatsoever that he wants because he has pissed too many people off. He has pissed off John Culloden. He has pissed off Michael Madigan. He's pissed off Forrest Claypool. And these are the people he has to these are the people he have to work with in order to get what he wants. The first thing what he ought to be doing and should have been doing is a budget for the state of Illinois, and then sit down and talk about what he wants and how he wants it. But first, get a budget. But no, he wants what he wants before he signs a funding bill. And the legislature said no. Now he's going around talking and name-calling everybody and just downplaying Chicago, talking about Chicago as if he's not the governor of Chicago. This guy is just – I don't know what else to say about him. I'm starting to become incoherent here because this thing is just out of hand. No budget for the second time. And he's crisscrossing the state. He's going all around the state, anywhere but Chicago. And he's blasting Chicago schools. He's blasting the mayor. He's blasting the legislature because they won't let him wreck the state. They won't let him have his way. Bruce Rauner, one of the things you have to learn, you have to compromise with people. You have to sit down and talk to people. You can't just come in the office and demand this and demand that because you are a millionaire and because you are a Republican. It ain't going to happen. You've had a lot of failures lately. Ken Duncan, Rahm Emanuel overrode you on some things involving the police department and city workers. And you've lost, and a lot of your candidates lost in March. The candidate you put up against Michael Madigan, Speaker of the House in Illinois. The candidate you put up against him, he's lost. So you've got your litany of losses in Illinois. You've got your litany of losses. You are a weak governor going around the state pretending like you're a strong governor. And nobody wants to work with a weak governor. Nobody wants to work with a weak governor, a governor who's trying to pretend like the losses and the setbacks means nothing. They mean a whole lot. They may not mean anything to Bruce Rauner, but the losses that he has encountered in the state of Illinois are big. Now he's going around the state, crisscrossing the state, you know, bashing and slamming Chicago, bashing and slamming the schools, the elementary schools, the high schools that millions of Chicago kids attend, and the schools that millions of Chicago kids and getting great, beautiful grades. You know, they're making their effort. They're thinking about their future, their lives. And this guy comes along and he wants to destroy it because he's a Republican governor. And I'm hoping that the legislature stands fast and, you know, we're going to take some more hits and bumps from this guy. He hasn't done his job since he's been in office, since he bought the office. He has not done his job. And yet he wants this, that, and the other. And he hasn't done a damn thing. If you haven't signed a budget into law in your state for almost two years, what the hell? You can't get anything else. This is a Democratic state, not a red state, even though we have a governor, a Republican governor. He has to work with them. They have the power. He has to work with them to compromise. This legislature will compromise with any governor. However, Rauner has, you know, broken so many. I mean, he has stepped on so many toes. I mean, smashed them. And now he expects them to work with him, give him what he wants. That's not going to happen. For 5 months until November election, Rauner is not going to be able to get anything done because so many people in this state can't stand him. And he doesn't care. They can't stand him. He wants this. He wants that. He wants to control schools. They wouldn't let him do that. You know, so he's going to, the best thing he can do, because he can't get anything done. We don't have a state budget for the second time. They're pissed off. Nothing's happening. No negotiations, no compromising, nothing whatsoever is going on to be voted on anything. But however, this ignorant governor can still use his veto power to decimate families and programs. And that's what he's going to keep on doing, because that's what he wants. He figured if he destroys Illinois, the people are going to wake up and vote in his Republicans. I don't believe that's going to happen, Governor. I don't believe that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen in a million years. All right, we just got through stepping in Bruce Rauner's ass, but I don't think that's going to be any consolation to getting a budget. Like I said before, Claypool called him ignorant. Actually, I believe Claypool just given up on him, you know, trying to fund these schools, and he's going to come out with something like, you know, these schools are prisons, crumbling prisons. And he said it so nasty, with a nasty face, like he just can't stand Chicago public schools. I mean, he said it with a hatred on his face. And I saw, when I saw and heard him say that, it was racism there against poor people, against people of color, against you know, those young children and teenagers who are attending public schools, Chicago public schools, it was just plain old racism written all over his face as he called Chicago public schools crumbling prisons. Ain't that something? Ain't that something? And especially if you have a child in the Chicago public schools, if you have a child and you witnessed and saw this governor call your school a crumbling prison, you would take offense to that right quickly. You would take a big, like I do, I take offense to it. And we're just going to have to vote this guy out. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks, in about maybe a half a minute. All right, here we go. It's beautiful in Chicago, folks, and if, excuse me for my rambling, but, you know, like I said before, I stay in the city of Chicago, and I'm very, 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 very adamant about what I'm talking about. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Hi, George. I'm just calling in for our call at 4:30 or 6:30.
It was at 6:30.
Okay. Should I call in then?
It's up to you. You want to call in then, or you want to stay on now and try to?
We could stay on now, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, no problem. All right.
I didn't receive any other instructions, so I'm just calling in early.
No, it's fine. It's just I tell guests to call in at 6:30 because I want to make sure that the show is going to be perfect when you call in because sometimes we can have, you know, interruptions and stuff like that, and I can have a chance to fix it before the guest comes on, and then I'll have a chance to kind of, you know, introduce you and all that kind of thing. All right, tell people about you. Give a little bit of your bio.
Okay. Well, my name is Brigitte Racine, and I'm the author of The Jaguar and the Cacao Tree, and that is a mythic fantasy for upper middle grade children, and that usually means you know, ages 9 to 12 or something like that. But even younger kids have read it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. And you are an award-winning author, journalist, producer, and entrepreneur whose work...
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds storytelling, mobile. I mean, you're all around person, you know what I mean? You do so many things. You're the author of numerous literary works and articles and has spoken on topics ranging from media sustainability on three continents. Welcome to the show, Brit.
Thank you so much, George.
Bridget?
You know, everybody always asks me that, and that's how I weed out the telemarketers. Because if somebody doesn't know, that means that they don't know, and they must be a telemarketer. But it is pronounced Brigitte Racine.
Brigitte, okay.
Yeah.
It sounds British.
British, huh? Well, you know, when I lived in
that's
France.
My interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, fair enough. I was born in the Czech Republic, so the pronunciation was a little different. But when I did a year abroad in France, my junior year in college, and so of course there I became Brigitte, right? I mean, they didn't even bother. They just that's what I was, and if I wanted to stay in France, that's what I had to be. So when I came back to this country,
it's a beautiful name.
Thank you. And, so that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's Brigitte. And what else can I tell you about me? Born in the Czech Republic, came here, subsequently lived in Italy, Spain, and France. Had a tremendous time because I love the food of all those places. But you know what? I miss this country. I miss the diversity, the fact that, you know, in the major cities, you can just have food from anywhere in the world. You don't really get that in Europe.
You missed the United States?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been
Isn't that weird?
To the politics?
I don't miss that.
Oh,
but
wow.
Back then, it
Neither
wasn't
do
like
I.
That. Yeah.
All right,
I don't
tell
think
us
anyone
more about the book.
That.
Yeah.
So, well, the book started really as... because for one thing, I'm a huge foodie. I love food, high quality food. You know, sitting around
you,
the table with
both,
all your friends.
Yeah.
And I think food is culture, and also because I've worked in sustainability for such a very, very long time, then you start to find out about everything that's wrong with the food system, and the very fact that it is a food system. That's the number one thing that's wrong with it, right? And then you start talking about all the chemicals and the processing and the packaging and all of this. And pretty soon, you end up realizing that we're all disconnected from the sources of our food. I used to work with a company that worked with the USDA, and they discovered through their surveys that a lot of children in America don't even know you're supposed to peel an orange. And I just about fell out of my chair. I said, what? You've got to be kidding me. How do you not know that you're supposed to peel an orange before you eat it? But sure enough, you know, children who live in food deserts, they just don't know. It's not their fault. It's the fault of the system. And so I wrote this book because I started. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want me to go on, or do you have a question?
No, I wanted to talk about the book. You're comparing this book to the Golden Compass and the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yes, because it is a fantasy. And I'm just giving you a background of, you know, why I wrote it, but it really is a fantasy. And the reason it is because I grew up with fantasy. I grew up with The Hobbit. I grew up with The Monkey King from China, which I think probably most of your listeners are not familiar with. Other fairy tales from other, and they're all from different cultures. So that really impacted my worldview. And this is a fantasy about the history of cacao, and that history is 5,300 years old. So it's a very rich history. It has a lot of deep mythological symbolism that, again, have, you know, been all but lost. And so we're digging them back up and putting them out there into the mainstream.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. You want me to do a reading?
Yeah, like an excerpt?
Yeah. So I was actually thinking about this, and I think what I will do is I'll read you the first couple pages from the first chapter, because the deeper you get in, the more you are in danger of giving away, and it's a really cute setup. So this first chapter, chapter one, is called Bees, Planes, and Dark Green Socks. And the subtitle is where we, believe me, it makes sense. And the subtitle is where we discover the surprising.
It sounds good.
Yeah. So this is where we discover the surprising interdependence of, hang on, I just lost my page. You made me laugh, so I lost my page. The surprising interdependence of three completely unrelated things. And it starts with Max's father saying, I can't find my socks. Which one, sweetie? The dark green ones, the ones I always wear on the plane. Jane Hammond, and this is Max's mom, Jane Hammond blinked at the ceiling. Dr. Robert Hammond had a habit of packing frantically just hours before a trip, the rest of the family ready and waiting. The taxi was due to arrive in a few minutes, and airport cabs were always on time. They had to be. Dr. Hammond wouldn't have it any other way. We'll buy new socks at the airport. The car will be here soon. No. I need my dark green socks. Sorry, honey. I know you think I'm a little off with this, but you know how important this trip is. She did. Jane Hammond did know. The bee colonies were dying all over the United States and Europe, and she wasn't about to stand in the way of her husband finding a way to stabilize them. Their bags were stacked by the front door, zipped up, locked, and labeled, all except her husband's dark green suitcase that still lay thrown wide open, waiting for its matching socks. Jane glanced over at Max, their 11-year-old son. Oblivious to the usual frenzy over green socks, he was thoroughly absorbed in his iPad. "Oh, Max," she said, putting her hands on his shoulders, "this is hardly the time for games. We need to find your dad's socks and get going." "No, Mom, it's not what you think," the boy protested without looking up. "It's Spanish." "Oh?" Mrs. Hammond took a better look at the screen of the iPad, an impressionist tableau in oils of the remnants of Max's past three meals. "Good heavens, Max, you've got to keep this thing clean." Wiping the screen with a tissue, Jane Hammond sighed and put her hands on her hips. It was Spanish, but it wasn't pictures with words. It was a passage of text that struck Jane as considerably more advanced than she'd have thought her son could read just a few months into his Spanish lessons. Some of the words Max had digitally highlighted, "abeja sin aguijón," for stingless bee, "leyendas de los Maya," for legends of the Maya, and "chocolate," for chocolate. "Look, they have the same word we do for chocolate." Max was ecstatic. Now he could really communicate with the locals. You want me to go on, or is that enough?
I mean, well, you don't want to give too much of it away.
Exactly.
So, did you have much input in the cover? I'm looking at the cover. It seems to be extraordinary. And that's an animal. Is that a tiger, a lion on the cover of it? Or did you have much input in cover art?
Yeah, that's the jaguar. The jaguar in the cacao tree. So he's in there. And he's a black jaguar. Those are rare.
Yeah. Did you have much input on the cover design?
Input in terms of advice or
in terms of help. In terms of help, in terms of how you want it to be, how you wanted the cover to be presented. Did you have any?
I'm lucky because I my mother is an award-winning artist, and so she is the one who she's been working with me since forever. So she did the cover.
I
know.
That's great.
I generally, you know, this is how we work. I know kind of what I want, and so I explain to her my vision, and then she looks at it from, you know, through her artistic eyes, and she just puts together these unbelievable works of art. So I just, you know, we tweak things here and there. We say, I want the eyes, like, for example, when we were working on it, there was one version where the eyes were a little too wide open, so it wasn't mysterious and menacing enough, you know, so we had her close up the eyes a little bit so the jaguar looks like it's about to pounce on you. So,
it does. It is eye-catching. I mean, it's something you just couldn't pass up. Once someone goes to your Amazon page, it's something that they couldn't pass up because it kind of comes out at you. He's looking straight at you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the page.
I know.
So, hey, wow, let me check this out. Wow.
Yeah, and I've had it done as an 18x24 poster, if you can imagine that. It's pretty intense.
And you've done other writings, too.
Mm-hmm. I have.
Yeah.
But this is the first book that's been – I've written for children before, but I haven't published any of it yet because it's kind of sitting there needing to be finished. But this is the first one that was actually finished and published.
Okay, I'm looking at The Serpent and the Jaguar.
So that is a – it's what you would call creative nonfiction, and it's a modern guide to the sacred Tzolk'in calendar of the Maya, and that is a very popular book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Great. What would you say to people who want to be writers and haven't made up their minds yet to do so?
Well, if they haven't made up their minds, they probably really aren't. You know, I mean, you've got to – it's something that you cannot help. It's not something that you decide. Unless it's, well, it depends on what kind of writing. But I mean this kind of literary, creative writing. You know, you could be a marketing writer, you can be a technical writer. So that sort of thing is different. But if you talk about literature, if it's not coursing through your blood and just keeping you up at night and, you know, that's all you want to do, it's probably not the real thing.
Well, I agree in some cases, but I always try to tell people if it's a passion that you have to do it, then do it. I mean, I think I think the only way a writer can find out if they want to be a writer or not is to write.
I try to
encourage.
But see, that's what I mean. If the person doesn't have the passion, you can't decide, well, I want to be a literary writer. It's not something you decide. Mm-hmm. It's just something that you cannot help but do or try to do.
Yeah,
right?
Because for me, I can't speak for other writers, but I can only speak for me. For me, writing is therapeutic. I mean, it's a stress reducer. I mean, if I can't find anything else to do in the day, I know I can always go to my computer, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if your computer runs out of juice, there's a pen and paper, whatever, right?
Yeah, pen and paper or something, you know. Because that, I mean, if you are a creative person, it just has to come out of you. You can't keep it bottled up, you know?
No, you can't. You'll explode.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Bridget Racine on my show. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Racine. That's okay.
Okay. All right. Okay. Because, all right. Anything else you want to tell us about the book?
Well, yes, actually. So there isn't just a book. Sorry for all the noise outside. It isn't just a book. We're also doing a coloring book that's going to come out. And we're very excited that. So the coloring book will have scenes from the book, you know, lots of drawings of jaguars and cacao pods and trees and things like that. And then we're also doing an interactive game for the tablet. And that is something really interesting. It's not about the book per se, but the themes from the book are introduced in the game. And so we're working on that now. So it's kind of a, you know, a three-product package, if you will. And then we're taking the whole thing. We're taking the idea of the book and taking it out into the real world by doing various classes and workshops for kids on the history and mythology of cacao. In fact, I just returned from San Francisco from doing a class for an organization called the Sprouts Cooking Club in the city.
Yes.
And they work with kids from all socioeconomic backgrounds. And that's what really excites me because, you know, I want the kids who normally wouldn't have something like this in their schools, especially the lower income neighborhoods. So they get a chance to be enriched by knowledge about the mythology of cacao and also to make chocolate, because I invited Jonas Ketterle, who's the owner of Firefly Chocolate, just north of San Francisco. And so he came down, and we literally made chocolate from scratch. We had the kids grind the cacao beans. We mixed in raw honey, and they were just... You could see it in their faces. They were just enthralled. You know, it was like a little piece of heaven for an hour. so that's and even the counselors, you know, and then I taught them how to read labels on the chocolate bars, and they were pulling out of the basket like all their Kit Kats and Hershey's bars, you know, all this stuff that they grew up with, and then they find out what's really in them when they read the ingredients, and they were just like, what? I can't eat this stuff anymore. It's because it's got PGPR in it, and it's got TBHQ, you know. So they also learn how to decode the list of ingredients and know that maybe what you're putting in your body isn't so healthy. You know, and that's a skill and knowledge I think they can carry with them for the rest of their lives. So we're doing exciting things.
Yeah, no doubt. And keep up the good work and always keep up the good work. Tell people where they can find your book, website.
Yeah, so my website, I don't know if it's something that you can put on your website, but it's myfirstnamelastname.com. So that's BIRGITTERASINE.com. Or they can just go to Amazon. That might be the best thing is Amazon, Jaguar and the Cacao Tree. And you can get it as an ebook or in print book. And I do want to mention to your listeners, if you buy the print book on Amazon, send me an email, contact me, because I will send you the ebook for free if you buy the print copy.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that you should, you know, pay for the same book twice. And we're building a microsite on my author website where if you buy the book, you get special access where you can read deleted chapters and all kinds of things that the rest of the site, the rest of the public won't have access to.
Wow, that sounds great. That sounds beautiful. It sounds wonderful. Thanks for being on the show, and I hope you come back. Wait a minute. I want to say one thing. This show is going to be in about 2 hours. This show is going to be podcasted, downloaded, and recorded. Would you like a link to this show to put on your website or wherever you want to put it?
Where absolutely. I'll help spread the word for you.
No, not for me, but for you. You know, this is for you, not for me. But on your website, your blog, or anywhere where people can come and check, you know, they can check out your book and hear you talk about it. All right. Thanks for being on the show. You are great.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was one of my greatest guests on the show, Barjit Racine. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly because I'm always messing up and screwing up names. I will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with me. Okay, another shout out to my guest. She was wonderful. And make sure you go check out her book on Amazon.com. If you haven't heard her, if you're tuning in late and you haven't heard, then just wait till the show is podcast. Download it and listen to it. She was great. All right. It seems we have the same smart quiz question from yesterday on the board here, if you've seen it. It's Barack Obama, who is just, and I told you the answers yesterday. It's Barack Obama, the 44th. President of the United States. Apparently, Hillary Clinton would be the 45th. I mean, she's clinched, you know, and Bernie Sanders is going to have to do the right thing and just get out. And that's what it looks like, you know, that's what it looks like. Bernie Sanders is going to have to get out. I think he's going to bow out. I don't think he's going to take this any further, because if he does, if he goes on to the convention, we could have President Donald Trump. And he's losing support among his own party as I speak. This guy is something else. He's just as ignorant and just as arrogant or stupid or dumb as just as Bruce Rauner is. You know, we got some really crazy politicians around here. We really do. And Hillary Clinton is going to wind up being the very first woman president of the United States. If Bernie Sanders, I think the only way Bernie Sanders can probably get it is tonight, Tuesday, the primary in California. He has to win, I mean, like in a landslide, you know, to stop Clinton. He may not even be able to stop her then, because they're talking about delegates and super delegates and making my mind spin, wondering why it's not the popular vote. Well, that's the way they do things, so we have to deal with it, even if we do not like it. Okay, let's move right along. Hillary Clinton will get this thing. There's no doubt about it. She will be the first woman president. And understandably, obviously, if she clinches, if she has clinched and she will clinch, Barack Obama, Elizabeth Warren, all of these powerhouses will be supporting her, endorsing her. There's no doubt about that, because they can't stand Donald Trump. They can't stand Donald Trump. I mean, especially some of the women. The women can't stand him. But Republican women like him. I don't understand it. But anyway, and we have to, if Hillary does pull this thing off, and it looks like she will, it's best that all Bernie Sanders supporters jump behind her and back her in order to defeat Trump. Because if they don't, and a lot of Trump will win, and a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters say they will not, for whatever reasons, not support Hillary Clinton. I was in that group. I was saying I wasn't going to support Hillary Clinton, but we cannot have Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton will be a third Obama term. There is no doubt about that, and Obama's been great for everybody but African-American people. There's no doubt about that. And we're just going to have to see what happens, especially with Bernie Sanders supporters. I'm begging Bernie Sanders supporters to back Hillary. Hillary is begging Bernie Sanders backers to back Hillary. But first of all, Bernie Sanders has to officially exit the race, and that's a fact, because she is going to take this. She is taking it, you know, and I have to applaud her for it. She's a winner. She screamed and yelled and BS'd her way all the way to the nomination. So did Donald Trump, you know, but so with Donald Trump, but we know what he is. He's a racist, just like Bruce Rauner is a racist. And people are saying, why don't Bruce Rauner endorse? No, the people are saying Bruce Rauner is going to endorse or will not endorse Donald Trump. My thing is, who cares who Bruce Rauner supports or endorses? He can't even get a goddamn budget going. Who cares who he endorses or who he likes or doesn't like? Give me a break. This man is one of the biggest failing governors in the United States. I mean, you got a state. Before this guy was elected, Bruce Rauner, there had never been anything like this. Twice in a row, he's refusing to sign a budget because he can't get his way. He can't get Rahm Emanuel to talk to Madigan about letting him have his way. That's crazy. That's not a governor. That's an asshole. You know, so it's just crazy. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Things in the news. Hard-hitting commentary, smart quiz question. We're going to have to change that, folks. That's an old question. We're going to have to get a new one. This show, as I've said so many times, trying, because it may never happen, but we're going to try. We're trying to make the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and we will be back, folks. Thank you very much.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
We're back, folks. I always love that little clip there. But, you know, it is still beautiful in Chicago. It's great in Chicago. What time is it? It's 6:51, just about 7 o'clock here in the Windy City. But it's a windy city, but it's not that windy. And that's great. That is wonderful. It feels it's a little cooler, but it is great. It's wonderful. Okay, what we're going to... All righty. They're still celebrating Muhammad Ali. They're still celebrating that. They're still talking about him on national news and all over the place. And he will be missed. He will be missed. He was the greatest. Like I said yesterday on the show, I'm going to say it again. Whenever, I mean, if you watch the documentaries, if you've been around during the days of his glory days, Muhammad Ali, in the boxing ring, practicing, sparring, you probably heard him say many times, "I'm pretty. I'm pretty. Look at me. I'm pretty." My understanding from long ago, he was not really saying that he was pretty. What he was saying was that the African-American race were pretty people. He happened to be one, but the entire race was pretty. He was calling all African-Americans pretty. I mean, Martin Luther King, I think he meant Martin Luther King, but actually Muhammad Ali was totally into civil rights. He was out there for African Americans, even as a Muslim. He was out there. He had African Americans back. And you know what? They had his back. So whenever he said, "I'm pretty, I'm proud," he was talking not generally of himself, but the whole African-American race. "I'm pretty," even though he was a great looking guy. But that condemnation reverberated to African-Americans in general. And I want to say, even before Ali, there were other great champions, African-American champions. Joe Brown Bomber Lewis, Floyd Patterson, if I can say it. Sonny Liston, of course, he knocked the hell out of Sonny Liston. Or some people are saying Sonny Liston actually threw that 1964 fight. He threw it. And that's why Ali was so pissed off standing over him saying, "Get your ass up. You ain't hurt. You not hit. Get up." That was classic. And that would live on forever in the history, going down in history of America. I mean, because he was the greatest. And that is there. Was also Rocky Marciano. And then there was Gorgeous George. Gorgeous George was a wrestler. Okay, but I included him in there because he's among some of the greatest sports figures, boxing or wrestling figures in this country. All right, so we're going to still say, wish to give the Ali family our condolences at the George Wilder Jr. Show, the finest Chicago talk show ever. All right. You're listening to my show. All right. Here we go. All right. More violence in the city of Chicago. It just rails on, folks. The violence just goes on and on and on and on and on. And we will talk more about it when I come back.
All this week, the debate has continued over guns and violence in America. But amid all the talk about background checks, magazine clips, there is one statistic you should know. A huge percentage of the guns out on the street are stolen, and hundreds of thousands of those turn out to be stolen from homes in your neighborhood. ABC Senior Justice Department correspondent Pierre Thomas decided to investigate.
You're looking at a New Mexico Walmart on Christmas Day. Mass thieves stealing rifle after rifle. This is a robbery in progress in Colorado. But these young crooks are not there to steal cash. They're there for the gun. And watch as thieves in South Carolina ram this stolen SUV right through the front door of this gun store. See right there? That's a rifle. Smash and grabs at gun stores happening across the country.
Gun stores are the candy store for criminals.
Nearly 25,000 guns per year are lost or stolen from gun dealers. But it may surprise you that an estimated 230,000 guns annually, roughly 10 times more, are stolen in home burglaries and property crimes. Watch these thieves caught on tape breaking into a California home. Jackpot. They find a gun.
Any burglar that goes in a house and finds guns, their eyes are going to light up, and that's the first thing they're going to take.
Some estimates show nearly half of American adults owning guns, and the crooks know it, breaking into homes for the hot commodity. Stolen guns like these recovered in an ATF sting often flow right into the hands of criminals, including convicted felons who are prohibited from buying or possessing firearms.
Talk to any criminal. They can find a gun within an hour or two. If a gun is stolen and it's a cheaper price model, you can buy it for $50.
Getting calls for gunshots in the area.
We saw evidence of the deadly pipeline firsthand during a recent trip to Philadelphia.
Gun arrests are made every single night.
In all, six people shot in a span of only a few hours. Nearly 3,000 people were shot here last year. 3,500 guns recovered, many of them stolen.
The detective ran this particular gun, and it came back stolen back in 2005.
Really?
So it's been on the street for 7 years now.
With the debate raging, if some guns get harder to buy, authorities say it will be even more important for retailers to fortify their buildings. And to gun owners at home, police say keep your guns out of public view and secure in a safe. Pierre Thomas, ABC News, Washington.
All right, that was a clip. But the crime keeps on raging in Chicago. This morning, a six-year-old was shot. I think sometime during the day, a three-year-old was injured in a shooting or something. The six-year-old was shot, it says here, last night. 8 to 10 shots were heard. Where is the police to prevent this from happening? Now, this just says, this is just one incident. I'm pretty sure there's been several incidents that have not been reported yet, or not reported at all. And if you've been listening to the show, you know that I have been railing about violence in Chicago, just like I've been railing about the politics in Chicago. You know, I live in the state, so I think I have a right to talk about it. Even though this show, we talk about anything, that's everything. We talk about politics, U.S. politics or anything. But as you know, I've been ranting about the violence in Chicago, and I've been even offering solutions to this. And I mean, if I were superintendent, I think I'd know how to get rid of the violence in the city of Chicago. But that's never going to happen. That's never going to happen. And you got some people who are just too proud to take advice from just ordinary people. What do they know? They don't know anything. They're not a politician. They're not rich. But the violence is happening right here in the city of Chicago. And I have a voice. You have a voice. We all have a voice. No matter where you are in America, violence will hit anywhere. And we have to stand up and fight back against violence. And I applaud those folks out here who are marching up and down the streets, shouting, "End the violence, put the guns down." I applaud those folks. I applaud all of these community leaders who are taking in some of these wayward teenagers and children to keep them off the streets, to keep them safe, and to keep them from picking up a gun and going out and shooting somebody and ending their lives as we know it. I applaud that. I mean, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. And I hope that they can keep it up, you know, because you can't always put the blame on the parents. Yeah, some of the parents are knuckleheads. Some of them shouldn't even have children. There's no doubt about that. But if the parents can't do their jobs, then maybe the police will have to do it for them, you know. And what actually gets me is that when a teenager gets in trouble, and there's plenty of evidence to back it up, here come the parents hollering and screaming and yelling and saying, "Not my baby, my kid didn't do it." You know, and there's plenty of evidence. And you look at these parents and you say, wow, no wonder the boy is in trouble. But knucklehead parents are going to be knucklehead parents. Bad parents are going to be bad parents. It's just going to happen. Good parents are going to be good parents. You know, I mean, anytime I see a flash mob of young people, 30 or 40 people, walking in the middle of the street, shouting and cursing. Young people, maybe 14 all the way up to 19, looking to do damage in a mob. My first thing I'm thinking, where the hell are the parents? Who knows? The parents might have put them up to it. And that's when the police comes into play. They have a job to do. That's why they're getting paid. If the violence is constantly increasing in the city of Chicago, the shootings, the killings, the muggings, the thuggings on the trains, the buses, then somehow the police are not doing their job. They're just picking up a paycheck, you know. And some people are saying, well, maybe the police are afraid to do their jobs. If they're afraid to do their jobs for some reason or other, maybe they shouldn't be police officers. If you're afraid to do your job as a police officer, get out and let someone else do that job who's not afraid to do that job. That's my thinking of the whole thing. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, I want to thank my guest, author Birgit Rassen, for being on the show. And we are just about into the second week of June. This month is going fast. And they're talking about 95 degrees by Saturday. 95. Wow. And that's June, I believe June 11th, 2016. If you listen to the show later on, if you're podcasting it, you know that that's a later show. But anyway, 95 degrees, folks, and it's still spring. I told my son, I said, wow, we're going to go from winter to summer. And that is exactly what happened. I think he believed me because it has happened before. All right, we got storms in Florida and Kansas, I believe Oklahoma. We got to pray for those people in those states. We got to send those people our prayers because some of those people have lost everything. Everything. And you sitting there in your great big old house and your garage with your two cars. Think about those folks who've lost everything. Middle-aged seniors, the elderly, who've lost everything in their house, who have lost their complete homes, everything. Because this could happen to anybody. It could happen to you. We got to send those people, you know, our prayers. If you can't, send them some money. If not, try to give up your time. Because I said this before, giving up your time sometimes is more than giving up money. But most people say, we want money. And give up your time and help someone else. That's what this show is all about, making the world a better place, one show at a time. And that's what it's all about, because the guests that I have on the show, I try to have guests that are knowledgeable who are going to make my audience knowledgeable. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is 7:04 straight up Chicago time in the city of Chicago. It's a great day. I feel good. There's no doubt about that. I feel great. And I hope you guys out there feel great. That's why I try to have a show that's uplifting to the listener, okay? Because, you know, some people tune into the show, they're down and depressed, they're thinking about this, they're worried about money, their bills, blah, 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 blah. They listen to George Wilder Jr.'s show, hey, wow, bing! It's a positive feeling, I hope. All right, folks, we'll be right back. Stay with me. Hey, welcome back to the show, folks. You're listening to George Wilder Jr. on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Amazon.com. I'm all over the place. Follow me on LinkedIn and Google. I believe I said Google. Didn't I say Google? But anyway, here is two people who are dissing President Barack Obama.
Michael Moore talking about his 25th anniversary for Roger and Me. He's at Toronto Film Festival. Talk about that. And he was having a conversation with Hollywood Reporter, and they asked him about President Obama. And, oh, boy, he let him have it. Let's watch.
I think Obama, sadly, has been, you know, he's done many, many good things, but he's also been a huge disappointment. And I really feel like I wish somebody would say to him, maybe I'll say it in case he's watching, you do read The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. President, don't you? When the history is written of this era, this is how you'll be remembered. He was the first black president. Okay, not a bad accomplishment, but that's it. That's it, Mr. Obama. 100 years from now, he was the first black American that got elected president, and that's it. 8 years of your life, and that's what people are going to remember. Boy, I got a feeling knowing you that you'd probably wish you were remembered for a few other things, a few other things you could have done.
Yeah,
well,
he's working on it right now.
I agree and disagree. He both goes too far and doesn't go far enough. So let me explain. First of all, I agree that President Obama's accomplishments have been sparse. Let's put it that way, right? So it's not that he did nothing. He did Obamacare. He had a couple of good laws. You have to go all the way back to Lilly Ledbetter, which is the first law that was passed during the Obama administration about fair wages for women. That was back when he had, like, he thought he had this much of a mandate. He's like, ooh, let me try to make sure women get paid the same as men do. Wow. And he got that passed. Good, good. Okay. And he gets a couple of Supreme Court justices, some good laws to protect consumers on credit card issues, although on the banks he's been horrible. Horrible, right? And you know, to protect college kids paying tuition, there was one good law passed there that saved us and them billions of dollars. So it's not fair to say nothing. But the central promise of President Obama was And he literally said this in one of his campaign ads back in 2008. And he said, I'm not going to play the same old Washington game a little better. I'm going to change the way the game is played. Now, he did no such thing. Never even made an effort, not 1% effort. Didn't try to change the game. The lobbyists still run the place. The donors are in massive control, and even more control than when President Obama took place. He has done the bidding of his own donors, whether it was bailing out the banks, who were his number one set of donors back in 2008, to the military-industrial complex, to the oil companies, and the list goes on and on of the people he has catered to, right? In his mind, President Obama has played the same old Washington game a little better. Now, I would argue, and probably Michael Moore would agree, that he's actually played it a little worse. So, two recent examples, but I could literally give you dozens of these, and I have throughout the years on the Young Turks. One is recently on immigration. Oh, Latinos, thanks for voting for me. 71% of your vote came to me. That's why I'm president. I told you I was going to do reform. Psych, just kidding. We're going to midterm elections, and I'm scared of the Republicans. I don't want more Republicans showing up to vote, so I'm not going to give them a reason by making sure I do not do immigration reform before the election, because I'm so scared of the Republicans. Well, you're not playing the game a little better. You're playing it worse, that you're caving into them. You think you're going to get more votes by trying to appease Republicans? It's been 5-6 years now. When are you going to get it through your skull? They will not be appeased. And now, of course, oh, no, Republicans, don't worry. I'm just as tough as Bush and Cheney was. I'm just as stupid as they are. I'm going to go bomb all over the Middle East. I'm going to go declare war on ISIS, and I'm going to get us involved in a war in Iraq and Syria. I'm going to do what Bush couldn't do, start more wars than him. Great. The one thing that you were doing well was, hey, at least we got out of Iraq, and we were eventually going to get out of Afghanistan. Now that's wiped away, too. So incredibly frustrated. I don't know if he'll be only remembered for being the first African-American president, but I do know that he is absolutely coasting. And he does not care, because here's the thing we always misunderstand. We always think, like, that Iraq war was a disaster. It was a failure. No, it wasn't. It was declared by, in essence, Dick Cheney, right, who was, by all accounts, running the country from 2000 to 2006. Bush, for better or for worse, took charge in the last 2 years, right? And actually, it was, believe it or not, slightly better than the Cheney years, okay? Now, and Cheney, who used to work for Halliburton, got a $34 million exit bonus for them, started a war where Halliburton's stock price went up fivefold during the war. Mission accomplished. So you think Obama, well, he's not doing anything progressive, and he seems like he's given up. He's not doing immigration reform. What has he proposed, let alone done in the second term? Nothing. Nothing. Okay? All the accomplishments I talked about were from the first term. So, as such as they are. So, you think, well, okay, that seems to be a failure. No, you're misreading who is making these decisions. It's President Obama. For him, what are you talking about? Massive success. I won the presidency twice. I'm awesome. I did Obamacare. They put my name on it. The Republicans did. Thank you very much. And I'll always be known for expanding health care along the lines of Social Security, Medicare, and then there's Obamacare, and that's a historic accomplishment. Good night. I'll see you later. I'm done. He doesn't really want to be president. The vacation stuff is right. He didn't take nearly as many vacations as Bush, but he loves him some vacations and the golfing, et cetera. Labor Day, he's out there. Where can I golf? Where can I golf? Oh, my God. Okay. But who cares? I'd let him golf all day and all night if he actually got something done, if he actually fought for his principles. What principles? There's only one principle for President Obama. That's President Obama, my great ego. Now, Michael Moore is smart. What he's trying to do there is appeal to his ego and say, what are you going to be remembered for? Because the one thing these presidents care about more than anything else, other than winning the actual elections, is what is going to be my image later? What's going to be my legacy? How much are people going to think I'm great, right? So now Moore is saying, well, they're not going to think you're great at all. They're going to think you did nothing. And he's certainly in the second term very largely right about that.
All right, you've been listening at two people, not just two people. That's a lot of people thinking the same way. You get some, actually, you have a lot of black, prominent black leaders thinking the same way, that Obama has done exactly nothing for African-American people in general. He's done a lot of things, great things, wonderful things, but he's lacking, folks. He's lacking, and now we're going to get probably another one, Hillary Clinton. because she's totally a Barack Obama third term. It looks like she's going to get it. And if she does, we have to get behind her, give her our votes. And I'm talking to all of those Bernie Sanders supporters. We have to get behind Hillary Clinton, or there will be a Donald Trump presidency. And that's scary and dangerous. Okay, Mark Kirk, Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois, withdraws support for Trump. He says, I cannot support Trump. Mark Kirk, Senator, United States Senator Mark Kirk, withdraws support, his support from Donald Trump. You know, on this latest flap, there's been so many flaps from Donald Trump. It's comical. There's been so many. And Mark Kirk gives reasons. Donald Trump bashing women. Donald Trump bashing African-Americans, Mexicans, Muslims. He just gets us all, right? His latest, he's bashing a Mexican judge who was born in America. And now he's saying his remarks on just about everything he tries to put out there is misconstrued. How can things, you know, a lot of politicians say that. You're taking what I say out of context. I didn't say it that way. Read the whole article. Read the whole speech. You know, but what we see and what we hear coming out of somebody's mouth, and you quote them directly when it comes out of their mouth, that is not taking what they say out of context. That is just them trying to get out of it, you know, back off of it. Excuse me. That's them trying to blame those who are criticizing them. You know, that's how they do it. And Donald Trump is quickly becoming a politician. He's actually a businessman, just like Bruce Rauner. He's a businessman trying to run the country and a state like a business. It's not going to happen. That's not the way to do it, Bruce Rauner. Okay, prosecutors. They're saying that a sex offender videotaped kids at a Wrigley Field urinal. A sex offender went into the bathroom at Wrigley Field, I'm assuming with a phone and with a camera, a phone that's equipped with video, and start taping children using the bathroom. And this sex offender apparently has done that before, because the official said they found more pictures and videos on his phone of children using the bathroom. Now, this is crazy. This guy's at a ball game, Wrigley Field, Chicago, a ball game. And he's inside the bathroom taking pictures of children using the bathroom. Wow. And he's... Wow, this is, the world is just bizarre, folks. It's just totally bizarre. And he is a convicted sex offender. That means he's done this several times. He's been locked up for this several times. And apparently he has gone back to jail, and this time with no bail. Man. All right. Drew Peterson. I mean, this guy's, I believe he's serving 38 years for the death of his wife, Kathleen Savio, I believe, you know, and they released some tapes of the trial, and one of the tapes of that current trial had Drew Peterson lashing out at the judge, screaming, I did not kill Kathleen. I did not kill Kathleen. Now he's going to jail for trying to have the lead prosecutor of the case murdered, a hit on the lead. and they're saying there's plenty of evidence of that on the tape, where he was telling an inmate at the jail he was incarcerated in, you know, of this guy should be taken out. So he's in jail for a while. He's going to be there. He will never get out. If he gets out of jail, if Drew Peterson, a former Bolingbrook police officer, if he gets out of jail, It will be in a pine box. You'll never come out of there alive. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Amazon.com, Google, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. I'm never hard to find. My number is 347-857-1762. We're going to have to make a recording of that because sometimes I'm so busy ranting that sometimes I forget to give out the phone number. And if I don't give out the phone number, people aren't to the show, and I do want people to have access to the show. All right, ex-Governor John Edgar is saying something. He's blasting Rauner, Bruce Rauner of Illinois. He's the ex-Governor Jim Edgar. I'm sorry. Ex-Governor Jim Edgar is blasting Bruce Rauner because Bruce Rauner doesn't compromise. He doesn't have compassion, and he doesn't have the keys to fix this mess that the state is in. He doesn't have it. Rauner comes out, do things my way, or they will not get done. In other words, they will not get done because he cannot make people, he cannot push people, he cannot order people, he cannot be mean and slimy to people and say mean and slimy things and then expect those same people to work with him. It's not going to happen, Bruce. It's not going to happen. So there is no point in, I mean, there is a point in the legislature working with Bruce Rauner, but he's a hard guy to work with because Bruce Rauner wants things his way and he has no clout. He's weakened. His poll numbers, legislature do not have to work with you if your poll numbers are in the gutter. It's hard for you to get anything done, Bruce, if people don't like you. And you do not fall in line. You do not play ball. Politics is not business. It's a different animal. And Bruce Rauner, he doesn't seem to get that. He's, like I said before at the beginning of the show, he's crisscrossing the United States. Well, it might as well be the United States, but he's crisscrossing Illinois, going downstate to suburban states and bashing Chicago and totally bashing Chicago schools. And this guy ran as a educational governor, and he's anything but an educational governor. All right. You know, so we'll be back tomorrow with some more of this. And my guest tomorrow is John Vest, and another guy with a weird name, folks. But I'm pretty sure he's going to help me pronounce it. John Vaskin-Pagin, something like that. I'm breaking it up in syllables. And his book is 10 Principles. His book is, I had to bend over and take a look. His book is 10 Principles of Rational Living. That should be pretty good. It sounds like it's going to be a pretty good discussion, folks. So stay with me for that. And you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. All righty, here we go. I'll be right back, folks. Thank you.
compassion. And please hear us. Hear us when we cry.
Tomorrow. Okay. Okay. All right. Tomorrow, on the show tomorrow, we do have a wonderful guest. Once again, he's going to talk about his work, and hopefully we can benefit from it as listening to him as he tries to tell us how we should support him and support what he does. Also, I will talk about, we're talking about John Vasquez. Pajan or something. His name is kind of construed. I hope I'm not screwing it up. But anyway, Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, he's been in office just about 2 years, almost 2 years. Anyway, come November, it will be 2 years. And the guy has never, ever, this just came to my attention. The guy has never, ever done a TV interview. This is the first governor of Illinois that has never done a sit-down TV interview with a reporter. I mean, former Governor Jim Egger did it. Former Governor Jim Thompson did it. Rod Blagojevich did it. Pat Quinn, he has done it. But this governor, Bruce Rauner, has never sat down and done a TV interview with a reporter at to talk to the people of Illinois. I will have more on this tomorrow. I hope you guys join me tomorrow, and thanks for tuning in today, and I hope you tune in tomorrow. This, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We are off the air. Thank you so much. God bless.